This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, in a series of aerial attacks, Israel kills at least 16 Palestinians and wounds more than 70 in the Gaza Strip. We'll have an update with our correspondent Rami Al-Megari in Gaza. Also, a Palestinian who went 71 days without food restarts his hunger strike after Israel breaches a deal to free him. The Israeli government launches a new international propaganda campaign featuring ads on CNN International that seeks to brand Israel as a haven of green technologies and environmentalism, while the actual environmental impact of its illegal occupation paints a different picture. We'll have an interview with Al Jazeera English reporter Shireen Tadros, featured in the new documentary film, The War Around Us, telling the stories of how she and another reporter covered Israel's assaults on Gaza in the winter of 2008 and 2009.
You're really transported into Gaza to the point where it's impossible for you to watch this documentary and not feel something.
And a major victory in the global boycott, divestment and sanctions movement as pension giant TIAA Kraft divests nearly $73 million from the Caterpillar Corporation, following major BDS activism by human rights campaigners. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. This week, the Israeli army launched a series of airstrikes on the Gaza Strip that has killed at least 16 Palestinians and has wounded as many as 73, according to a report on Monday by the International Middle East Media Center based in Bethlehem. Palestinian medical sources say that Israel struck Gaza at least 40 times since last Monday during airstrikes and tank shellings. Reporting from Gaza City, our correspondent Rami Al-Megari wrote that on Wednesday, June 20th, one of the 16 killed was 12-year-old Mamoun Al-Dam, who was playing soccer on his family's land when an Israeli missile struck the area. On that day alone, 8 Palestinians were killed amid exchange of fire between the Israeli army and Palestinian resistance factions. However, Mamoun's family said that there was no Palestinian combat activity in that area at the time of the Israeli missile strike. Mamoun's blind father, Mohammed Zohdi Al-Dam, 67 years old, was wounded by shrapnel to the head and neck. 3 other children who were in a nearby field were also wounded, according to the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. We now go to Rami Al-Megari in Gaza for more on this story. Rami, give us an update on the last week in Gaza. Reports are saying that there were approximately 40 separate attacks by the Israeli army and that at least 16 Palestinians have been killed and dozens wounded. What can you tell us about the last week there in Gaza?
The week that passed last week was a horrible, one more horrible week, time for the Palestinians in Gaza, intensity of the fighting by Israeli army, the warplanes attacks, 40 Israeli airstrikes on a civilian area, which is the Gaza Strip, the coastal enclave. 40 airstrikes Israel has launched that time, killing about 16 Palestinians, including 3 children, and a bit of them, a bit of those killed were teenagers. Teenager men, teenager boys, and also more than 73 injured, including civilian women, children, and elderly. Because of the nature of the attacks by the Israeli army, because these attacks hit open fields, people farming in their own lands, farmlands, they hit also residential homes, which are proximate to the border between Gaza and Israel, to the Israel-Gaza border lines, either in northern or eastern Gaza Strip. And also these strikes hit moving cars or motorcycles and the streets, like the Israeli attack last Wednesday on a farmland or a piece of land owned by a little Palestinian family in the Sha'af neighborhood of Gaza City. These people were just having some sort of a picnic or just sort of stay out of the in this summer time. The elderly man, the elderly woman, and their child, Mamoun Al-Dam, this family from Al-Dam family, where the Israeli drones missile hit the piece of land, killing instantly the 12-year-old boy, Mamoun Al-Dam, while his parents were looking at him. And this was a sort of a horrible scene, one of the horrible scenes that Gaza saw last week during my work, my investigative work about these incidents as a journalist working for the Electronic Intifada from the ground. I myself was about to cry because of the moving and very touching human feelings that these elderly people expressed, voiced out to me during my work throughout the past week. Actually, it was a very horrible scene for the family and for other families in the Gaza Strip who have lost little children who had nothing to do with the Israeli claims about the fighting or the armed men that are that continue firing rockets into southern Israel. So the Israeli strikes are very intense targeted so many objects in Gaza, including civilian targets. It's true that Israel always say that its warplanes attack potential launchers of rockets into nearby Israeli towns. But I can tell you the fact that Israel never avoids harming civilians when attacking what Israel claims always launchers of rockets from Gaza. I can give you an example of this. In one of these strikes against the Gaza Strip, during the end of these attacks, the final days of these attacks, an Israeli missile hit a motorcycle in the Al Nasser Street in Gaza City. About 20 people were injured during that attack, particular attack. And unfortunately, and let me say that it happened to be a sort of a wedding party or a wedding celebration for one of the Gazans that happened to cross the street. They were bystanders in the time of the Israeli attack on that motorcyclist. At any time, the Palestinians feel unsafe here in the Gaza Strip and always just to try to tell their stories out to the world, to tell their suffering out to the world, that they need a sort of a real protection from Israel's intensive attacks against the Gaza Strip, which is a very limited area, about 40 kilometers long and 12 or 13 kilometers width, while about 1,700,000 people are left. So it's a very intensive Israeli fighting against Gaza, which is very densely populated, which would mean that the casualties, the possibility, potential of the casualties in Gaza is very high.
Your story about Mamoun Aldam,
yes,
described the attack against him that happened in a field,
yes,
where a family was having a picnic and Mamoun was playing football.
Yes. Football, yes.
Can you talk about what he was doing at the time that he was killed by an Israeli missile?
According to the elderly parents of Mamoun, the minute he was attacked, he just made some tea for his elderly parents. That is something that he used to do since they had owned the piece of land about 1 month ago. Okay, he made some tea, fired some wood, and made the tea for his parents, and then he laid to listen to the news broadcast from his mobile phone that he was using, was having at that minute. And he heard about Israeli strikes in the Gaza Strip, and he told his parents about this. That's what his parents told me, that there are Israeli attacks underway. And suddenly he left the place, he felt pissed off because of the Israeli attacks in the area. That's what his father told me, actually, Muhammad Aldam. And he left his elderly just to play, left the mobile phone just to play around them using the football, which was not good for playing, but it was not having that much air, the football. That's what his father told me, and they talked about how they could fix it. His father promised him to fix it, to have it better next time. He held the football and just played in the corner, and at this particular minute the Israeli strike took a place, and a large pillar of smoke just appeared in the piece of land. So his mother said to me that she listened, she heard him while screaming, and she got to know that her boy, her son Ma'moon, was harmed. She rushed to see him, and she held him in her arms and got him closer to his father to see that he was stained with the blood, and his legs were wounded badly, very badly, out of the rocket fire, of the missile fire by the Israeli drone. That's what happened at that particular moment. So these people, and many people in Gaza, just try to live normally, try to live peacefully and safely, but Israel's intense fighting against Gaza and the frequent attacks on Gaza never allow these people to live some sort of normally and to continue to suffer just under the Israeli occupation and the Israeli attacks against them from time to time.
Thank you so much, Rami.
You're welcome, Noura.
That was our correspondent Rami Al-Megadi reporting to us from Gaza. For more on this story and up-to-date coverage of the situation in Gaza, go to electronicintifada.net. And coming up a little later in this podcast, we'll have an interview with Shireen Tadros, reporter for Al Jazeera English, who's featured in The War Around Us, a new documentary film about the reporters who covered the 2008-2009 Israeli attacks on Gaza from the ground. A Palestinian prisoner has resumed his hunger strike after Israeli prison authorities recently breached a deal to free him from so-called administrative detention, imprisonment without charge or trial. According to the Palestinian prisoners' advocacy organization Ad-Damir, on June 21st, Hassan Safadi was told that his administrative detention order was renewed for another 6 months. In a press release, Ad-Damir reports, quote, Hassan, who launched his hunger strike on March 5th, was one of the five long-term hunger strikers in administrative detention who were promised release upon the expiration of their current orders in the agreement that ended the Palestinian prisoners' mass hunger strike on May 14th. During his hunger strike, Hassan was subjected to severe ill-treatment by Israeli prison authorities when he was held down by prison guards and forcefully given treatment by a prison doctor via an injection in his arm. By the end of his hunger strike, his health had deteriorated significantly and he was in critical condition. Hassan has been held in administrative detention since June 29, 2011, and this renewal of his detention is a blatant violation of the agreement between the Prisoners' Hunger Strike Committee and Israeli officials. Ad-Damir is concerned that this renewal may cause Hassan to return to open hunger strike, which would put his health at urgent risk. Ad-Damir additionally fears that his extension may indicate even more troubling breaches of the agreement to come, as there is now no guarantee that any of the long-term hunger strikers will be released upon their given dates. That was from a press release from Ad-Damir. Israel's violation of its deal to free Hassan Safadi is only the latest breach. As the Electronic Intifada reported, Israel began violating the deal it reached to end a mass hunger strike almost as soon as it was signed in mid-May. Currently, Samer al-Bark is on his 37th day of a hunger strike, which he resumed after Israel reneged on its agreement to free him. Meanwhile, Akram Rikawi, who is seriously ill, is on day 76 of his hunger strike. For more on our ongoing coverage of the hunger strikes, visit electronicintifada.net/blogs. The Electronic Intifada's Ali Abu Nima reported this week that the Israeli government is launching a new international propaganda campaign featuring ads on CNN International that seeks to brand Israel as a haven of green technologies and environmentalism. But don't expect the campaign to address the environmental catastrophes brought about by Israeli occupation and apartheid. The campaign, which includes sponsorship of CNN International's World Weather Bulletins, is being launched to coincide with the UN's Rio Plus 20 Summit on Sustainable Development. Israeli daily Ynet reported that the ads will focus on Israel's supposed prowess in, quote, green technologies, with claims that Israel is a world leader in water desalination, that 40% of its drinking water is desalinated, and that 70% of Israeli sewage is recycled and used in agriculture. These technologies, the ads will claim, are of benefit to people all over the world. Israel's effort to shift the focus away from its occupation, oppression, and colonization of Palestinians and their land has in recent years taken the form of pinkwashing, using Israel's supposed tolerance for gay rights to market it as a liberal haven. The strategy of greenwashing is intended to work in a similar manner. Yet the greenwashing strategy should provide new opportunities for the Palestine Solidarity Movement to focus on the environmental catastrophes Israel has created on land, sea, and air. The Electronic Intifada points out that the Green Israel ad campaign is unlikely to mention that because of the direct impact of Israel's occupation and colonization of Palestinian land, Palestinians face severe shortages of water and are systematically denied water for basic needs while Israeli settlers are given access to the West Bank's main aquifer. Nor does it mention the fact that 95% of Gaza's water is unfit for human consumption due to Israel's siege and military attacks, or the frequent contamination of Palestinian villages by flows of raw sewage from Israeli settlements. These are just a few examples of Israel's environmental record of shame, but you won't be seeing them on CNN, Abunima remarked. For more on this story, visit Ali Abunima's blog at electronicintifada.net/blogs. A new documentary film is out now, which tells the story of the only two Western journalists who were inside the Gaza Strip during Operation Cast Lead, Israel's three-week assault in the winter of 2008 to 2009, which killed approximately 1,400 Palestinians by land, air, and sea. The War Around Us is directed by Abdallah Omeish, the filmmaker of Occupation 101, and is produced by Ayman Mohaldin, one of the two journalists who are featured in the film. Along with Mohaldin, Shireen Tadros reported for Al Jazeera English, and the two were the eyes and ears to the Western world during the attacks. Israel prohibited every other Western reporter from entering Gaza during the attacks, a move that was widely regarded as a deliberate attempt to prevent the outside world from finding out exactly what the Israelis were doing on the ground in Gaza during those 3 weeks. Joining us on the Electronic Intifada podcast today is Shireen Tadros, speaking to us from Cairo. Shireen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So talk about this film a little bit and how you can reflect on what you reported on when you were in Gaza during Operation Cast Lead, now 3.5 years after those attacks.
Since then, I've covered so many different conflict zones and other stories, but yet there's something about the Gaza one that really, you know, stays in my heart, and there's been no other story really like the, you know, that one. Maybe because it was my first big story, or maybe because I felt so close on the ground and I felt this responsibility that, you know, the English-speaking media weren't there, and that's such a unique position to be in. But really, the film itself is just a real raw account of what it's like to cover a war zone, and I think it appeals to people on different levels, from a journalist level to anyone who's interested in the region, to just a human story as well, a human story about the Gazans and what happened to them, the feelings of normal people on the ground at that time, and also about, you know, Ayman and I, who a lot of different emotions both towards the story and towards each other. I mean, it really is a very real account. Abdallah captured our relationship and really the growth in our character and our relationship just so well.
And of course, Israel continues to regularly attack Gaza, as we saw this past week, in which at least 16 people were killed in missile strikes. In The War Around Us, the documentary film, it shows unseen footage of what was actually going on in Gaza away from the eyes of most of the Western media. What do you think the job of a reporter should be in terms of covering Palestine or covering any story in which a militarized occupation army is bombing an entrapped civilian population, for that matter? And how did covering the attacks on Gaza transform you personally as a reporter and as a human being?
I think the best that we can hope for, and I really came to this realization after Gaza, and I talk about it in the film, is for you to document what happened so that nobody can ever come years later or decades later and say, no, that never happened, or it didn't transpire that way. And that's what I'm proud of in our reporting on Gaza. It was so thorough as a channel, and not just me and Eamon, but really as a channel. Al Jazeera did so well to bring out different sides of the story, give the Israeli side as much as much room to give their point of view and what was happening from their side. I think we probably did that more than any other channel. And even when I came out, the Israeli officials said to me that there wasn't a time where they wanted to be on Al Jazeera and they didn't have a platform. So, I think that was the best thing that you can do as a reporter, is just document what's going on. In terms of changing opinions, I'm not sure that's our job. And I think that if you go out there as a reporter to do that, then you're going to be so disappointed in your career, because you can't control how people receive what you're doing. All you can do is document it. And for me, it was also that makes people feel it. And the stories that I did weren't all about death and destruction. In fact, the most the stories that I remember and the ones that I concentrated on were actually just about people who nothing happened to them. There was this one family. I did two stories on them. This mother with four kids, and nothing happened to her in terms of her kids weren't killed. Nothing happened to her house. But the idea was that Israel has done a great job in dehumanizing the Palestinians, especially Palestinians in Gaza, and it was very difficult for anyone from the outside to relate or feel any emotion, I think, towards Palestinian women in Gaza. It was a lot easier for the outside world to sort of close their eyes and think, at the end of the day, this is for Israel's security and so on, all of these lines that are spun from the Israeli side. And all I tried to do with those stories of that particular woman was to show you that she is just like any other mother. And, her son was telling us that the reason why he's scared and clinging to his mother isn't because he's scared of dying, it's because he was scared his mother would die and he'd be left alone. And that fear that she had as a mother for her son, because she couldn't protect him and she was so scared that if she died, there'd be no one else. She's a single mother. There'd be no one else to take care of her kids. What would they do? That feeling that you can't protect your children, there was nowhere to go, there was no safe zone, there was no refugee area, there was nowhere to flee, there was no border you could cross. So that feeling that the risk wasn't in your control, how you protect your children, I wanted that to resonate. And, that's the most I felt that I could do, just make people feel and understand what it's like to be inside.
And, this is a very difficult film to watch. And I think Abdullah's intention on, what you were just talking about, to document and let people really experience as much as they can from 10,000 miles away what was happening on the ground there is very important. It has a visceral impact on people. What do you hope audience members who watch this documentary come away with most of all?
I mean, I've seen the reactions that people have when they're watching it. Mainly, I've watched it with friends and family, and there tends to be, there's laughing at times, because there are points in the film, where we just show you how we live, some like funny moments. A whole sketch about me concerned with the fact that I hadn't washed my hair for so long. I mean, there's funny moments, and then there's moments where you'll be afraid, you almost feel like you're in there, it feels surreal. And there are moments where, people are crying because of the emotion and the intensity. So, it really depends on the, what your focus is when you're going in there. It depends if you're generally a man or a woman, or if you're a journalist. I think a lot of journalists have watched this and come out feeling, the same sort of feelings they felt, maybe not in Gaza, but in other conflict zones that they've covered. It is so gritty. It's so close to reality. You know, you're really transported into Gaza to the point where it's impossible for you to watch this documentary and not feel something. And I'd be really interested to hear from viewers, that aren't my family and friends, as to what exactly they felt coming out of it.
Thank you so much, Shireen.
Thank you.
That was Shireen Tadros, reporter for Al Jazeera English, speaking to us from Cairo. We have a review by Sarah Irving of The War Around Us on the Electronic Intifada. Visit our arts and culture section at electronicintifada.net. We now go to news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. The Electronic Intifada reported this week that the We Divest campaign, initiated by Jewish Voice for Peace, reported on Thursday a major victory for the BDS movement. Pension fund giant TIAA CREF has removed Caterpillar Incorporated from its Social Choice Fund's portfolio. As of May 1, 2012, financial data posted on TIAA CREF's website valued Social Choice Fund's share in Caterpillar at nearly $73 million. Today, it is zero. TIAA CREF's decision to divest comes only 1 month after the Quaker Friends Fiduciary Corporation's decision to divest $900,000 worth of shares in Caterpillar. The BDS momentum does not stop with this week's announcement. A precedent-setting vote comes up in coming weeks when church commissioners of the Presbyterian Church USA will vote on a motion to divest from Caterpillar. No doubt solidarity campaigners are creating a cost for corporations doing business as usual with Israel and profiteering from occupation, colonization, and apartheid. In an update to this major milestone victory, the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation also announced via email on Thursday that, quote, "We are so excited to announce that as of this week, Caterpillar was removed from the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Socially Responsible Index, a list used by socially responsible investment funds to discern acceptable companies for investment." And on Monday, Morgan Stanley Capital International sent out their own statement, which identified Caterpillar's involvement with the Israeli military as a key factor in their decision to remove the company from their list of socially responsible investment funds. The statement said in part, quote, "Caterpillar's environmental, social, and governance rating was downgraded in February 2012. The key factors determining the rating include a January 2012 labor dispute and subsequent plant closing in Canada, an ongoing controversy associated with the use of the company's equipment in the occupied Palestinian territories, management of environmental issues, and employee safety," end quote. In a press release following the announcement, the We Divest campaign quoted major activism and solidarity figures responding to the Caterpillar divestment victory by TIAA CREF. Omar Barghouti, a Palestinian human rights activist and founding member of the BDS movement, said, quote, "CAT is out of the bag of TIAA CREF's socially responsible companies, thanks to the inspiring campaign waged by JVP and its partners, with vision, persistence, and tactical skillfulness." Cindy and Craig Corey, the parents of Rachel Corey, who was killed by a Caterpillar bulldozer in Gaza in 2003, said, quote, "For nearly a decade, we have witnessed human rights abuses committed with Caterpillar equipment in the West Bank and Gaza, and have joined thousands who have asked the company to stop supporting these actions. We are hugely gratified that TIAA CREF has taken this step. When governments and corporations avoid responsibility, we must refuse to profit from their abuses. Our family salutes and thanks TIAA CREF for this decision that moves all of us closer to accountability." To read more on the story and so much more happening in the global BDS movement, visit electronicintifada.net/tags/BDS. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, pointed opinion and analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. This week, be sure to check out the latest on our blogs. At electronicintifada.net, you can also post comments and sign up for our daily newsletter. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and a special thanks to Flashpoints and KPFA in Berkeley. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.